Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with Bob Ewing. Bob is a designer, illustrator, and lettering artist from Indianapolis. He is best known for his daily lettering project, and Inch by Inch, the button company he started with his friend Drew Hill. We talk about his circuitous path to becoming a designer after dropping out of architecture school, why he started his lettering adventure, why he and Drew started Inch by Inch, the challenges of running a business, and more, all right after this. Jack Prince is one of our favorite companies to work with. They offer great products at even better prices, with some of the best customer service I've ever seen. Why not pick Jack Prince next time you need t-shirts, business cards, stickers, or flyers printed? Right now, Jack Prince is offering 4-day turnaround on their most popular apparel products. That's 4 days with no rush fees, no hassle, and no BS. With apparel from popular brands like American Apparel, Next Level, Gildan, All Style, and more, starting as low as $3.99 each. Now is the time to take advantage of this great offer. Visit jack.inc/4days to order your apparel today. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 20% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth.
Bob, thanks for joining with me.
Honored to be here. Appreciate you having me.
So this is your second time here, sort of.
Yeah.
First time you were here with Drew.
Correct.
So.
Cool. So, we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Yeah, we definitely will. So since last time we didn't get your full story, let's start with, where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in rural Indiana, in the middle of nowhere, kind of, but also close enough to the city, so just mm-hmm. outside of Indianapolis, but kind of on a country road. The best way I describe it, and now like the Stranger Things is a thing that mm-hmm. That kind of makes it easy for me to describe my childhood without the aliens,
sure.
obviously, or the underworld. But yeah, kind of grew up on a farm in the middle of Indiana. So,
What was that like growing up? Were you big into art as a kid, or were you more of a jock?
No, I mean, I was kind of lost in the middle throughout most of my childhood. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I had two older brothers. My middle brother is 5 years older than me, and then my oldest brother is 11 years older than me. So a lot of time it was just me and my imagination uh-huh. and my toys, like G.I. Joes or Micro Machines, and spent a lot of time just kind of playing and exploring my house and like our yard. And there was a tree, like a weeping willow tree, that I would like every summer go out and
sure.
kind of just play in all day. And then as I got older, I got to, you know, I had a bike and would get to ride my bike to my friend's house and mm-hmm. I'd be going all day and come back by dinner time, and which, you know, sounds kind of crazy, but it was pretty much the norm.
Yeah.
Growing up. But yeah, I was always in this, loved sports, loved art. Didn't really necessarily, I guess, I mean, I kind of fit in like in both places. I didn't have any, like, I don't remember any issues, like,
sure.
in, you know, growing up with either of those crowds. So
that's good.
Yeah.
So when you got into high school, were you taking art classes at the time, or just
yeah.
a lot of them, or more as a hobby?
No, I mean, all of them, basically. I had art in elementary school and middle school, mm. and then in high school, I really started to kind of explore, you know, pottery and just basically whatever class I could take that was art. And then at the same time, I was also taking, kind of exploring the computer, which was mm-hmm. kind of a new thing at that point in the late 90s, and everything that came with that, like CAD and doing, you know, technical drawings and elevations and anything that kind of had to do with architecture. Mm-hmm. I was doing that as well. So I was kind of getting kind of both sides of that.
Sure. And then you get out of high school and you started college and you went for architecture, right?
Yeah. So I spent every summer in high school working for my uncle's architectural firm. Mm-hmm. And I made, like, you know, a decent wage, and I would spend every day basically inside 9 to 5, you know, working on elevations and red lines and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I kind of knew exactly what I wanted to do. And it all kind of hinged on me getting into Ball State's architecture program, mm-hmm. Which I ended up getting into. But I also got, like, still kind of this side of me that, like, really loved art. And because of Drew, who was going to this small commercial art school in Cincinnati, we drove over there with my mom, and I applied and got accepted. And mm-hmm. But at the time, I didn't know what graphic design was, and I didn't really know what I would do with a commercial art degree.
Sure.
So as soon as I got accepted to Ball State, that became, okay, this is my dream. I know exactly what I want to do. Onward to Ball State. So
what'd you do when you got there? What were you're focusing on architecture? Were you taking other stuff at the time? I mean, obviously, you know, you got to take the general studies and all that fun stuff. But
yeah, all the general study stuff. But I had kind of I had AP calculus and physics and English in high school. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I was, like, some of those classes, which I wasn't that excited about anyway. I was definitely not excited about them once I got to college, because a lot of them were, like, easier than what I was taking. And I sure. just needed the core kind of classes to get through. So kind of try to breeze through those, much like I did high school, you know, applying enough effort, but not necessarily all my effort in the, right. you know, those classes. And then the architecture program was pretty intense. I actually started in the spring. So started school in the fall, but I didn't start architecture until the spring, because they had a fall and spring class, which meant I had to take a whole summer semester of architecture as well. So oh, wow. I was up basically for 2.5 years. I was going to school with you know, just little breaks like Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So I think that kind of led to my inevitable burnout.
Yeah, I was about to say, because most kids, at least the first couple of years, are taking the summer off.
Yeah. Well, and then I was always working. I would come home and work, mm-hmm. whether it be at my uncle's or doing something else. Also coming home for Christmas break and picking up odd jobs.
Sure.
Just to make some money while I could. So.
Sure. And you kind of come from a blue collar family too, right?
Yeah. So my, we didn't have a lot, but, like, mm-hmm. we didn't necessarily know, like, we had enough. I feel right. like, at least it didn't. The pressure of, you know, money and stuff like that didn't necessarily trickle down to us with mm-hmm. the kids. Even though I know, like, my mom was a school teacher for 26 years at my high school. She teaches family and consumer sciences.
Sure.
And then my dad drove a cement mixer for 36 years. Mm-hmm. Put my mom through school and kind of did all of that. And then he also farmed on the side. So I was often kind of, you know, there was school. And then in the summer, there's playtime, but then there's also, like, work time. Mm-hmm. Always, you know, helping my dad in the field or helping him fix something, whatever that, you know, may be.
Sure.
Which at the time I was not a fan of as a kid, obviously. but looking back now, like...
Well, what kid is?
Yeah, exactly. I consider myself pretty handy and able to problem solve and figure things out. And that, mm-hmm. that definitely comes from, like, all those, you know, all that time with my dad. So
sure. So you're going through college, you're starting off right out the gate, going summers and everything. You're there for 2.5 years, and you reach this kind of breaking point for you. What precipitated that?
Yeah, actually there was another thing in there. My mom actually, like, fell on ice and like hit her head.
Oh, wow.
She was like she was going through, like, a rough time. So I was also traveling home. Oh, quite a bit for a couple months early on. I guess that was probably my second year there. So I was kind of back and forth too, and, like, just trying to help out and do stuff where I could, and then also just kind of be home, yeah, to help And then my roommate at the time, which is now my brother-in-law, he also was going home. So like we lived together for the first couple of years, and like I would stay sometimes, but he was going home. So sometimes I just go home mm-hmm. on the weekends as well. So, but yeah, I got in, it was fun. Like I enjoyed school, enjoyed all my friends and some of that other stuff. But then slowly and surely, I just like started to realize that like this wasn't the path for me. I was starting to realize like graduating that I was going to be doing exactly what I was doing in the summer mm-hmm. when I was in high school for my uncle. And mm-hmm. I didn't really enjoy that. Like looking back, I think about it and like I was kind of inside and it was a good job, but like mm-hmm. a lot of my friends were outside and they were doing, you know, other things in the summer. And I looked back and I was kind of like stuck inside and just kind of realized that I was going to have to be doing a lot more of that to kind of, you know, you have to pay your dues.
Sure.
In anything you do. And I realized I didn't want to pay. I kind of felt like I'd already kind of paid those dues and I didn't want to pay anymore. So I just stopped going to school, which is not like, not the way to go about that.
No, that's an expensive way to drop out.
Yeah. And then, I just stopped. I was still there kind of hanging out with friends and just kind of being worthless to some, mm-hmm. you know, some degree, playing video games and hanging out and sleeping and doing what, you know, college kids do mm-hmm. when they're not going to class. But then, you know, eventually came time I had to tell my parents that I was, you know, not going to be attending school anymore. And at the time, Ball State has a good, like a design program and a good art program too. That wasn't even where my brain was just like,
wasn't on your radar at the point.
Yeah, it wasn't. Like I said, I hadn't figured out what design was or what I would do with art. So I just kind of need to get away mm-hmm. from school for a while. So my dad got me a job at the cement company that he worked at. Mm-hmm. And I was just like a grunt at one of the plants for a couple months. And then they realized that I had some electrical background. So next thing you know, I was on the maintenance crew, which actually was like a savior for me. I worked with some good guys and mm-hmm. I got to travel a little bit more and I wasn't just kind of stuck in one place.
But, sure.
So I did that for a couple of years before I got tired of being like filthy and covered in cement every day. And then like winters were rough.
Right.
We were super busy. And that's when they would, you know, it's slower. So that's when they shut the concrete plants down and basically being an electrician, we'd go in and rewire them and mm-hmm. do all kinds of things. So then my brother moved to Florida and I kind of hitched. I was like, if you're going to Florida, like I'm ready to get out of here. I need a break. Mm-hmm. So he got me a job where he was working just for a contractor mm-hmm. that did trim carpentry and window and door installation on big custom homes all gotcha. Over Florida. So I spent a year kind of traveling Florida and the beach and we worked at Disney for a couple months doing trim carpentry on an Irish pub and like some cool stuff and things were good. I was making good money and things were going good at the time.
Gotcha. So you said you did that for about a year. How long total were you in between school?
Oh man, this is when I would ask my wife if she's better with all the dates and stuff. 3-4 years probably.
4 years.
Yeah. It's because even when my wife and I started dating when I was in Florida, mm-hmm. we dated long distance for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I moved back to Indiana. And then at that time I had another window and door installation job mm-hmm. at a little company here and quickly realized like, okay, I'm like, things are getting serious. Like I'm going to marry, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to get married. I need to find a career. And at some point, I don't know when or I don't remember when, but at some point I figured out what design was. And I kind of realized that I could go to this Ivy Tech community college.
Sure.
And go to school at night and work during the day. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started doing. I still remember the night, like my wife and I were at dinner and I was like super nervous to tell her that like I wanted, you know, that I wanted to go quit my job or not quit my job, but start going to school. Because mm-hmm. I'd literally just paid off my school debt from, you know, from Ball State. So, right.
How'd that conversation go?
It went like so good. She was more than like willing and happy that mm-hmm. I, you know, I was going to be, you know, trying to find my niche. So
could she tell that you weren't really happy with what you were doing?
Probably not. Like I'm a pretty like easygoing, happy person. Mm-hmm. But like I think now that affects me more. Like if I'm unhappy or if I had a bad day or something like that, whereas like back then, I was pretty just kind of go with the flow, and mm-hmm. I was still trying to figure it all out anyway. So sure. still trying to figure it all out. So
you go back to Ivy and you're doing Ivy Tech. What classes are you taking? What are you kind of focusing on?
Yeah, luckily all my, core classes from Ball State transferred.
Sure.
So I could just do design class. And I remember they wanted me to take art history, which mm-hmm. I hadn't had, but I had like two semesters of architectural history. Mm-hmm. And I tried to talk my way out of it and they were like, no, you're going to need to take this. And then I started taking it and I realized that there was so much crossover and so much of what I learned in architectural history mm-hmm. applied to art history. And a lot of them, you know, were kind of one and the same. So basically I went back to my advisor and was like, listen, like, I don't know how, but like, I don't need to be taking this. I've already learned all this stuff.
Sure. I remember taking all those art history classes that I had to take, and there's tons of stuff, especially when you get in like Roman and then, you know, you get up into like the 1920s where like Bauhaus and all that stuff is coming out, and there's so much crossover.
Yeah, exactly. So somehow I end up talking my way out of that, and I talk my way out of a speech class.
Lucky you.
I guess I know, which I had speech in high school and I've done a multitude of presentations, and we had some speech at architecture school. Mm-hmm. So I talked my way to that, and I was just doing design. So I was taking, you know, page layout, typography. So page layout was Cork Express.
Sure.
What we use, and then typography class, and then like a Photoshop, Illustrator, like one mm-hmm. and two. You know, they were all kind of based on just teaching you the programs, and then there's like there's the fundamentals of design mm-hmm. in there as well too, but it was all kind of based on like you need to know the software.
Sure.
Basically. So
that's what I was about to ask, because when I went to school, you know, the focus at my school at the time was definitely on learning the programs. I mean, they taught you the fundamentals of design, but they didn't push your design abilities much. It was more, these are the programs you're going to be using. Let's focus on that.
Yeah. Whereas, it was an associate's degree. So, I mean, it was pretty much a technical school at the time. It's grown a lot since then, but, one blessing was that the three like kind of core teachers, they're still there to this mm-hmm. day. They're amazing. I never could have like, I mean, just kind of like that classic kind of teacher's heart and, you know, wanting to do as much as they can for the students. And I think they kind of, me going back a second time, I had a completely different outlook on school. Mm-hmm. Like I was paying for it again, and I was like, I know how much this costs. I'm here. I'm fully in. And I think they kind of recognized that. Like, I think that's when my passion started to kind of come out. And then like this like drive to just make stuff, even though like it was bad stuff. Just to make stuff. So
no, I know that feeling well. I kind of did the same route of I started off college and just I wasn't into it. It was too much freedom for me, and I didn't go to class, and you know, got asked to leave for a semester, which turned into about 3.5 years. And then when I got back in college, I was super focused, and because I was paying for it, I knew where that money was coming from.
I mean, a lot of people, I was too immature to be there. Mm-hmm. But that's what you did, mm-hmm. you know? And even to this day, like there's finally this, I feel like just now there's starting to be this kind of turn in higher education. And it's like, you don't have to go to higher education and, you know, basically assume all this debt, and then come out and not find a job. So there's other avenues these days. And I think there's going to be a big shift in that, in our lifetime for sure.
Yeah, I definitely
hopefully before our kids go to college, or if that's the path they choose.
Well, so, I mean, there's so many careers where, I mean, graphic design, you don't necessarily have to have a formal degree. I mean, there's definitely things that I learned in school that I'm glad that I went for, but you know, unless you're going to be a lawyer or doctor or architect would be good for going to school because there's a lot of physics involved with
there,
that.
There is. So,
so but yeah, there's, yeah, there's, I agree with you. There's definitely going to be a shift at that point. So, so what happens when you get out of school? What do you start doing?
So even before I got out of school, I actually got an internship at a small, digital print shop. Actually their, the funny thing is their background is in blueprints. So they were printing like architectural and construction drawings in black and white, but then also had like a graphics, like kind of color department, everything from like small 8.5 by 11 copies all the way up to banners and, and posters and stuff. So there I learned, I mean, a lot of pre-press and post-production stuff. So, I mean, I was a graphic designer for them, but I basically was printing other people's stuff.
So you're a production artist.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I learned, you know, there I learned some valuable lessons like that you need to consider like the end product when you're designing something. You need to know how it's printed or how it's going to be printed or and all those things in, you know, in the beginning, because that all that stuff all goes into the design. And it was there where I kind of discovered French paper for the first time.
Sure.
Too, at a small paper place in town, as I was like, you know, creating birthday and wedding invites for all the people that I, you know, all my friends, you know, early on, because that's what you do.
Kind of
cut your teeth.
Exactly.
So yeah, it was good. And I was there for about 2.5 years.
Okay. So you were there most of the way through school and then
afterwards. Yeah, I skipped that part. So I had an internship there and at that point I quit my job because I was paid. So I quit the window and door place and then I just went to work there and they were really great and really flexible with me to the point where now I could start going to class during the day too. And you know, some days I saw night class, but other classes were only offered during the day. So my schedule became flexible. And then once I graduated, I stayed, they hired me full time and yeah. So I was there total, I mean, you know, with school and with the internship, it was probably about 2.5 years.
Okay.
So
what do you move on to after that?
My first agency gig, actually Drew Hill, had moved. We kind of went our own ways. He went to Cincinnati and then stayed there and worked for a couple agencies. And then he made his way back to Indianapolis. And he got a job at this agency in town. I'm literally just, you know, 4 blocks from the digital print shop I was working at. And he had kind of reached out and said there, or I'd kind of heard. So funny, I was printing, they had a designer there and I knew him because I would print his stuff and I found out they were moving to Austin. So then I contacted Drew and I was like, hey, I heard you guys are going to be looking for a designer. And he was like, wow, that news travels fast. And, so I got he got me, basically sent my resume to the HR and got me an interview and, I got hired on the spot, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was a production artist. That's how I kind of started. And then through the course of four years, I, you know, I was a designer and then eventually an art director before I left.
Okay.
But learned a lot from Drew. He's kind of, you know, he's always been kind of a mentor of mine and kind of showed me the ropes and he's always, and then now, you know, we still work together to this day. So obviously not with just inch by inch, but we still work at Element 3 together. So
sure. So you leave that agency and go on. Now, did you go to work with Drew again immediately after that or did?
Yeah, we jumped ship together.
Okay.
Yeah, we both got hired at the same time. Uh-huh. So, yeah. But I think what probably something that's, well, super important in my story was the whole daily lettering thing that I started when I was at the first agency.
Okay. So that's where you started it.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2014, right? Yeah. 2014, September, 2014, I was like kind of in this place where that place is, it's kind of a production shop.
Sure.
And we got to do some cool things, but a lot of times you're just, you're just doing whatever the client tells you to do
or churn and burn.
whatever the count team tells you to do. And so I was working like 60, 70 hours a week and didn't really know any better. But at this point, like I have a daughter who's young and things were starting to change in my life and I didn't want to be working that much. And I wasn't super happy about the work I was working on. And I'd always seen these kind of beautiful designs, like Ken Barber, Luke Ritchie, Ryan Hamrick. I mean, there's so many. I mean, so many of these guys and girls that I just kind of looked up to, and was like, how do you create this? Like, I, you know, often like a lot of people try to take fonts and kind of morph them into, you know, something that looks handmade and never had any success.
Yeah, guilty of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us are, and then kind of realizing that this is something I wanted to do. So through reading a couple blog posts that kind of kicked me into gear, started the daily lettering thing in September of 2014, and it wasn't like a yearly 365 project. It was I'm going to do this every day for however much time I can dedicate to it, just to get better at it, and then post it to Instagram at the time, and as a way to just kind of keep myself accountable. And most of then it was just friends and family that followed me on Instagram. So it was just kind of a way, for them to help keep me accountable.
So as this is growing, you're kind of gaining more notoriety and, you know, a bigger following and getting noticed for lettering and stuff. How did that change things in your career?
Drastically. One thing that I think the biggest thing that came out of that was this like sense of community that I hadn't experienced in the design world yet.
Sure.
So I was starting to meet people that were kind of like not only like people that basically I looked up to, but a lot of people that were kind of on the same path as me, the same level. Mm-hmm. We were kind of coming up together, and then that all kind of culminated about 200 days into my lettering at Creative South 2015, which would have been 2014. So I started lettering in 2013, and then 2014 was the first year I went to Creative South, Drew and I did.
Okay.
And I'd never been to a creative conference, but kind of decided, hey, pitched it to work. My creative director was like, yeah, we'll pay for this. Mm-hmm. Have a good time. So it was cool to like show up there, and like I had made a point. Plus I kind of had a little bit of confidence just from those 200 days of lettering that I was going to meet people and like shake some hands, and I met some people. I knew some people are going to be there.
Sure.
So just really made it a point to try and connect with people. I was there, and then kind of getting blown away by the glory and the amazing and awesomeness that is Creative South. I mean, I couldn't pick a better conference, to start with to meet people. So, because it's set up exactly for that reason. So.
Oh yeah, I think Creative South was my first conference, and I think 2014 was my first year as well. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely understand that.
Yeah.
So you keep on. About day 200, you said, is kind of when things really took off with Creative South and all that stuff. And
yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So what are you learning about the process and about yourself during this time?
The first thing was I was just teaching myself to draw again, because I'd kind of gotten away from that. Like most people, I was like rushing to the computer to start designing and was kind of skipping the most important part in the design process, which is, the concepting and the sketching and all that. So I was just teaching myself, to draw again, which was huge. And that kind of changed everything. It changed my design process. I was also kind of starting to get comfortable with just sharing work that wasn't that great, because a lot of the work early on wasn't that great, but I kind of committed to sharing it out there, and like the feedback was good, even though it wasn't great. Like people were, rooting for me. I kind of got this sense. So that kind of gave me, project kind of gave me this, kind of will to share the process, like a bit of everything, like all the ugly parts that go into that, the beautiful piece at the end. There wasn't a lot of people sharing the process at that time. I know Hamrick and Ken Barber were with their processes is beautiful. I feel like compared to mine, like those guys with their pencils are amazing. So
yeah, I think there's still a lot of people who still aren't comfortable sharing their process.
Yeah,
and it can be super daunting to do that because you're opening up a vulnerability that, you know, we've gotten so used to with social media and all that stuff, showing this curated life where everything is polished and perfect before you put it out. So showing things warts and all and how you get to that stage, you know, I think people are, I don't know. I think there's a lot of people that are worried that you're going to see the smoke and mirrors behind everything and they don't want to give that up, that protection up.
Well, and there's no tricks to trade, you know, like to what I do, just drawing letters, or designing or illustrating something.
Sure.
Obviously there's things that I've learned over the time to make my process faster, or better, or, you know, more efficient. But other than that, there's nothing to hide. People, like, I don't feel like by sharing my process that like someone is going to come along and steal something that I do. I mean, if they do, that's awesome. Like, that's if they take something that they see I do and then apply that to their own process and that makes them better, then that's a win-win for everyone. So it's not necessarily going to change how I go about things. And then that just allows you to kind of connect with people on a different level. I'm just kind of sharing, hey, I made this. And it just, you know, because we've all been there where it's like, how did that, this is crazy. Like, how did someone do that? How did you make that? And you kind of think that it just appeared out of nowhere and took no time when in fact it was the exact opposite.
Sure. So, anytime I see somebody do motion graphics, I'm like, what, how? I don't understand that. Yeah. My brain does not work in that fashion.
I know. It's I've like dabbled in that and it's crazy. It's a whole nother world.
I open After Effects and I just start to cry right away.
I know. It's a completely different like interface to me. Like it's so different than, you know, Illustrator and Photoshop. So
it's an Adobe product, damn it. They should all be the same.
I know.
So, you know, you go through this, you are obviously, like you said, you didn't start this out to be a 365 project, and it really wasn't a 365 project because it went well past that.
Yeah.
You know, at what point, you know, was there a point where the motivation wasn't for you? It was to keep sharing stuff, or did you have to push through that at any point?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there was lots of times I had to push through things. I think commitment was another thing that I'd kind of learned out of that. And this idea that like I can do something, like that I can set my sights on something and accomplish that. And it became like an addiction for sure. My wife and I had many conversations about, you know, this, you know, I was working and then I'd come home and do this project. I was often spending an hour at least or more. And then I had other freelance projects that I was starting to take on. And it was definitely starting to cut into our time together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we had a multitude of conversations. And in all honesty, like so I went 534 days before I stopped. And probably sometime around 450 days, sometime after a year, I was not getting out what I was putting. I wasn't getting as much out of it anymore. I was putting far more into it than I was getting out of it. I'd kind of crossed that barrier, for sure.
So when you got to that point where you're putting in more than you're getting out of it, how are you processing that, and why did you keep going at that point?
Like I said, it was kind of an addiction.
Sure.
And just like it was I mean, that's the right word for sure, but it was also just a part of my routine.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was thinking about it during the day or, you know, all the time, like this is something I need to do today. What can I do? You know, what's it going to be? And it was kind of hanging over me, for sure. But
Was it you were feeling this pressure to not let other people down?
I don't really remember feeling that pressure of letting someone else down. Mm-hmm. It was definitely more of an internal struggle for sure. But I remember we did by this time I'm working at Element 3, which, like, if it wouldn't have been for that, me starting that daily lettering project, I never would have started creating that work that allowed me to have the portfolio to get hired at Element 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like huge for me. And I'm not working 60 hours anymore. I'm working, 40, 45, which made the lettering thing, easier to do. And then, sorry, what was the?
I don't remember. I lost it too. Yeah. So we were talking about, I had asked you if you hadn't stopped because you felt a commitment to not letting other people down. And
yeah, it was definitely like, and even so we started this workshop series at Element 3 called Few Sessions that we're still doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Barber was the first one. And I remember sitting with Ken and we're talking. We didn't really talk that much about lettering. We did a little bit. We just kind of talked about other stuff, life and stuff, which, I feel like is often the case with when designers get together.
Yeah.
But we were talking about the project, and I was kind of confessing to him that, like, I knew I needed to stop. And it was literally a couple of days after that that I kind of started to wind down. I did about 3 or 4 posts in a row.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of let myself down easy, I think. But then finally that, on through the 535th day, like, I felt this kind of huge, like, sigh of relief. Like, and I didn't miss it. I think I was afraid I was going to miss it. And I didn't, because I think I knew it was time for something different.
Sure. So what was that something different?
It was just kind of focusing on larger, I think I was making a commitment to focus on, like, just lettering pieces in general, like doing and sharing that process. So that was kind of the big change, was I'm going to do, like, larger lettering pieces and start to finish off some of this work that I'd, spent the better half of a year and a half creating.
Mm-hmm.
And take some of that and then start to, like, really kind of start, like, refining it and make it into stuff. And then I was also, like, doing freelance work, so focusing on that and sharing that process, and then also, like, being able to share, like, the work that I, get to do at Element 3 as well.
Mm-hmm. So during this whole process of, switching jobs, at this point you've got 2 kids now, you're doing the daily lettering challenge. You and Drew decide to get together and start inch by inch. What was kind of the deciding factor of wanting to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it started pretty innocent. And it was just Drew and I, we worked together for, at that time, 6-5 years, but didn't really necessarily get to work together that much.
Sure.
We worked in the same building, but better on clients and stuff. So it was just kind of born out of, like, us wanting to do something together. And that kind of started with this idea of, like, doing something with 1-inch buttons, something that we both kind of collected growing up, something that doesn't take a lot of space. But then also, like, the design challenges of a 1-inch button.
Mm-hmm.
Designing for such a small canvas is not easy to do. So that there was, like, that kind of challenge there. But then we quickly realized, like, while we wanted more buttons, we didn't want to create, like, we didn't want to be responsible for creating buttons.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, obviously the natural thing is, like, well, let's get our friends and these people we look up to donate time. But obviously we're not trying to make any money off this. So then the idea of this non-for-profit came about, and it seemed like a clear path. And all this kind of happened over an evening, just over some text messages, kind of quickly. Looking back, and then next thing we kind of decided, that the youth art education was the route we wanted to go. Now that we both have families and art is getting stripped out of our school systems because of funding and teachers don't have like money to buy supplies. And it's kind of crazy
that's
the first thing that's getting taken away. And this fear that maybe our kids wouldn't have art. And like, how can we, as designers and as dads and as people, start to give back and help out a little bit, especially in a city that, you know, has kind of meant so much to us.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in an area that's meant so much to us. So,
yeah. So how did you pick which places to donate to and all that stuff? 'Cause that's a big undertaking of finding the right places.
Yeah, for sure. And we, I would like to say it was easy or clear, but that wasn't even, we first started with sponsors, like kind of realizing that we weren't going to be able to do this by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're going to need some help.
Sure.
So we started with Brian French Paper,
mm-hmm.
Fantastic family, fantastic people, and an amazing company with an amazing story. And Brian was on board from the get-go. And he was like, yeah, I'll do this for sure. And then over that, because of that first year, I went to Great South, where I met Nick Sobrato of Mama Sauce. We had become friends. Also an amazing human being.
He was not as easy on you, though.
No, definitely not. But he's special. He's a special guy, uh-huh. for sure. But yeah, he was a little harder. He wanted to know, you know, a little more of the details. It wasn't going to be like, hey, you want to do this? And he's like, yes, I'm in. So that took a little bit more convincing, or at least not convincing, but at least showing him that, we thought this out and all that. And then, so Mama Sauce came on board, Element 3 came on board. And then the last piece of the puzzle was finding someone to make the buttons, because Drew and I knew we were already going to be packaging all the stuff up. We didn't want to make the buttons.
What? So. You didn't want to hand press all those buttons?
No. So Busy Beaver Buttons out of Chicago, they donated 6 months worth of buttons for free.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped us kind of get started and get going for sure.
Yeah.
And then after that, obviously, where's the money going to go?
Right.
We knew we wanted to have one charity local. And Art with a Heart became that charity through some vetting of, you know, half a dozen charities. And we really like the idea that they're like a traditional art program, and they serve inner city underserved kids in Indianapolis on the nearer side, which is our side of town. And they do like after school programs and summer programs. It was a fairly young non-for-profit, and they're like already making a big wave. So there was some like amazing people committed to that. And then through the help of our sponsor, Busy Beaver, we landed on the A26 Shy, which does the same thing, but from a creative writing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the larger A26 network.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just kind of a real, I think originally we thought we'd want to go national, but we kind of realized that the money we'd be donating was smaller, and we thought we could affect change more on a local level.
Sure. So, you know, through this process, because Inch by Inch has been going on for how long now?
On the third year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the things that you've learned through this process?
Running a business is hard. Yeah, I mean, we've learned so much, and our boss at Elma 3 kind of told us this. She's like, you're going to learn so much about running a business than you like ever thought you would.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a non-for-profit, becoming an actual non-for-profit is not easy.
No.
Should have listened to our wives. Well, we should always listen to our wives, but get a lawyer and a CPA like in the very beginning, and get QuickBooks and make sure you have all that stuff. Have all your ducks in a row from the start. And then one thing, I mean, a lot of people like buttons, which is awesome for us.
Sure.
Because it kind of, we thought like our moms and our family would sign up, and through the help of our artists, we've grown like so much, grown exponentially and continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
With honestly not I mean, there's a lot of effort that goes into it, but not as much as could be, being that, you know, we're trying to divide up our time between, you know, work and family and freelance and stuff, and inch by inch. It could be more, but we get to do a lot with the time we have. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of with the time that you have, through all of this, you've also got a freelance career. Where are you fitting this stuff into the gaps without sacrificing time and family time? And
yeah, it's not easy. that's the, like, there's no right answer to that. And there really is no, it's a constant struggle to find a balance between, like, work and family. Like, I don't really believe in the work-life balance thing, because that implies that work is negative and life is good. And I think they can be both positive, but it can be have a negative effect if you focus on one area more than you should be.
Sure.
And usually that's work. But it's mostly in the evenings, or early in the morning that I, you know, squeeze in freelance work. Also, like, inch by inch doesn't take a lot of time, or, like, after, you know, now they're in our third year, we kind of have this rhythm and routine down pretty well. We could always do more, obviously, but one thing we kind of realized that, like, if the buttons don't ship for one more day, like, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. No one's going to lose their mind over it. So just kind of realizing what's important and what's not important, and trying to prioritize things. And I'm not very organized person. I'm also a procrastinator.
I know that feeling well.
But I don't know. Now it works because my wife works from home part time, so we're both working in the evenings. Mm-hmm. But then we both are trying to be more cognizant of, like, or need to be more cognizant of, like, okay, we don't need to work tonight. Like, we can take a break, just hang out. But at least we're, like, sitting on the couch next to each other working. So the beauty of laptops.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, that's always a tough one. It's hard. That's the answer.
Gotcha. So through this entire process, what do you think you've learned most about yourself? Other than you like to procrastinate a lot and you're not very organized.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot about myself. Kids will teach you a lot about yourself.
That they will.
Sure.
Yeah.
I learned that I can do whatever I want to do as long as I want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that, which sounds simple, and it's not always that simple.
Sure.
I learned that my kids allow me to kind of turn the design switch off, which is something I always struggle with. You know, as creatives, there's not really a time you're not working. You're always thinking about some problem in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But my kids give me that kind of reprieve from that, which has been like a huge blessing for me. Just to kind of be a kid with them, every evening and on the weekends, for sure. And then I think I just learned that, like, it takes a lot of work to do anything, to the best of your ability. Like, a lot of work and a lot of, like, if you want to do something and you want to do it good, you have to put that time in. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just dedicating time to get better at something. And that's everything. Like, right now, I'm still doing the lettering and I'm still getting better at that.
Sure.
Dedicating time to get better at illustrating, but, like, I'm also dedicating time to my family, to my church, to, like, our life group, to be a better person. And yeah, just trying to be better each day than I was before.
Gotcha. So you mentioned something there. You're dedicating more time to get better at illustrating, and you know, having known you for a couple of years now, and having seen, you know, you definitely didn't start out posting illustration stuff, but you've been posting a lot more of that lately. Is that kind of a new motivator for you of trying to improve on that?
Yeah, it was one of my goals for this year, professionally, was to do more illustration work.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of coincided with me transitioning roles at Element 3, from an art director role into a designer illustrator role.
Mm-hmm.
That it kind of aligned perfectly. Like I'd kind of already made that goal in my mind, and then kind of made, through the help of like an amazing employer, that allowed me to make the shift into, you know, just where I just get to create stuff. All day is amazing. But that all came from, it all stemmed from the lettering, and me teaching myself to draw again. And that kind of gave me the confidence to try, mm-hmm. you know, illustrating new things that I never would have been able to make before if it wasn't for the like daily lettering project.
Right. What was it that made you want to kind of, and I don't want to say, I'm trying to find the right word for it because the way my head is wanting to phrase it sounds as a negative, but you know, go from, cause you have these tiers in agency life where it's, you know, you go from a designer to an art director to an associate CD to a CD and all. So, you know, title wise, you're kind of taking a step backwards. You know, what was it that made you decide that?
Yeah. I mean, when I interviewed at Element 3, I remember telling my creative director that, like, you know, he asked that question, like, you know, where do you see yourself in however many years? And I was like, well, I probably will have your job. And he just kind of laughed. And I was serious at the time because that's the track that I thought I wanted to be on, like art director, associate, or, you know, senior art director, associate creative director. And I just realized, like, I enjoy the strategy of things and problem mm-hmm. solving, but I don't enjoy it as much as just designing or just illustrating or just creating something. I think there is this kind of negative connotation that like an art director is above a designer.
Sure.
But really they're on the same tier. Like, and so as a production art, like if you're a good production artist, like there's not really a level there, even though I know from like the design world or, you know, people kind of assume that,
right. You know, there's that hierarchy bottom. In everybody's mind. Yeah. Yeah.
But those all change with every company too. They all have, you know, different names for people, mm-hmm. titles and different kind of, organizational structure to them. So, really it's been huge for me. It's kind of changed, everything, for the better. Definitely, because I was not in a great place. I wasn't real happy with the work I was creating,
mm-hmm.
And that was starting to show. And it wasn't that I wasn't giving my all, or you know, showing up for work and doing my job, but it just wasn't. I wasn't doing the work that I needed to be doing or should be doing.
You weren't feeling fulfilled by that.
Yeah, and then you kind of compound that with an hour and a half commute each day, mm-hmm. and that starts to make you think. Okay, this, like, maybe it's time to move on. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't be here. I'm wasting an hour and a half each day, not working and not spending time with my family, and I'm not happy with the work I'm creating.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of came, that transition came with me kind of mentioning something to Drew. Drew's still, like, a mentor of mine, and we have, like, weekly one-on-ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then me mentioning him, I'm not that happy. And then him kind of taking that to my boss, and then us having a conversation about, okay, what, like, if you want to stay here, then we would be more than happy, you know, to like have you stay here, which is an awesome feeling
mm-hmm.
to have, that they were, you know, willing to be kind of flexible with me and help me find a place that fit. Because honestly, like, that finding a good place to fit is going to allow me to create the best work that I can.
Sure.
It's going to just be, you know, a reflection on the company. So.
Sure. So, you know, a while back when we were talking about the illustration stuff, you mentioned one of the goals that you set for yourself this year. What are some of those other goals?
That's the big one this year is just, and then just push out of like my comfort zone again, mm-hmm. Going back to those days when I sucked at, mm-hmm. you know, at lettering in the beginning. And I was just kind of exploring, trying to find that uncomfortable feeling again, to learn and do something new.
Sure.
Cause I kind of feel like I'm in a comfort zone and, I can certainly create the types of lettering that I've been doing, and people ask for that. But like trying to be more like Eric Marinovich, or Ken Barber, who can do like so many things.
Sure.
So yeah, just trying to get uncomfortable and get better. It's just like in, you know, this inherent quality to kind of create, mm-hmm. But not create the same things all the time.
Right.
I get bored easy. So, those kind of goals just came out of that kind of desire, that kind of like feeling inside to do something different, but mm-hmm. not abandon, you know, what I'm doing. I still love lettering. I'm going to continue to sink time and effort into it.
Sure. So you know, as we're kind of wrapping up here, what is on deck for you? What are you looking forward to, and what's coming out from you soon?
I'm looking forward to summer, spending time with my family on the lake, uh-huh. For sure. I don't know. Drew and I are in the process of reevaluating inch by inch, and kind of make. There's an inevitable pivot that's going to happen sooner than later with inch by inch, so we're super excited about. Mm-hmm. That's about all I can say.
So 2 inch by 2 inch.
We're still going to do 1 inch buttons. That's it. I don't know. I'm in a good place. I'm happy. I'd like to find more ways to kind of create with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's just like me making sure that I like set that time, like when you get home and you're tired, but still like there's a lot of energy that comes from that, and they enjoy that, and I get to see like my daughter is an amazing artist already. Mm-hmm. And that's not by me or my wife like forcing it on her, just like a matter of like that there's paper and markers around and she can draw all she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
She's always drawing, so yeah.
Cool. So wrapping up, where can people find you online?
I'm on the Instagram and the Twitter under @BobEwing_ or @BobWing_.
Mm-hmm.
Both spelled the same. And then on Dribbble.
I'm glad you clarified the both spelled the same, because there probably would be people going, well, how do you spell Bob?
Yeah, BobWing and BobEwing are spelled the same, so. and I'm like posting constantly, I feel like, so and I try and sprinkle in my life into that too, so there's often shots of, not often, but I try to, my stories are filled with my kids, and then I squeeze mm-hmm. them into the Instagram posts when I can, so.
Yeah, I love your son's attitude.
He's such a punk right now. He's 2.5 and he's such a punk.
That's the age.
But he's a big sweetheart too. Which he's like cuddly and sweet, mm-hmm. which has never been my daughter. She's always like independent and the smartest person she knows,
uh-huh.
Which, you know, it brings on its own challenges, but then my son will flip a switch and he'll just be a punk, but that's the age. So, but it's fun. They're complete opposites. That's for sure. So.
Kids are definitely fun.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight. I appreciate it.
I'm honored. Thanks for having me on the show.
So
appreciate it.
And since you've been to Creative South for the past four years. And have been on the podcast before, you know, we end every podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks. So would you mind taking us out?
Not at all. Thanks for having me, and go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Bob on Twitter @BobEwing, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook @CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @CreativeSouthGA, or over at creativesouth.com. And I'm @JFrostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprince.com and get 20% off orders over $25 when you use promo code CreateSouth17 at checkout.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.